My next guest, Adam Johnson, has a terrific piece on the website of FAIR.org. FAIR is Fairness and Accuracy in Reporting. He actually wrote the piece late last week when the media was consumed by FBI warnings about a heightened terror alert. Be on the lookout, be vigilant for ISIS-inspired attacks leading up to the 4th of July weekend. We heard that warning from every national and, frankly, local news media outlet on July 1st, on July 2nd, and on July 3rd, heading into the holiday weekend. But as you may know, no such attacks ever actually occurred. You may have heard these sort of warnings before the Super Bowl, the Oscars, Christmas, New Year's, and other major days on the American calendar. How often are they based in reality? Well, I've asked Adam to join me here today. Hi, how are you today?
I'm doing well, thanks.
Okay, so you went back and looked at the history of these FBI warnings going back almost all the way back to 9/11, right?
Yeah, went back. The actual number that we published in the FAIR piece was a kind of placeholder number. The number is actually a little higher. We have about 52 now. But what we did is we looked at the history of FBI and Department of Homeland Security warnings since 9/11 and compared them to what actually ended up occurring. And in every case, nothing happened, either an actual attack or a foiled attack of any kind.
Now, is it possible that the FBI and other Homeland Security agencies could say, well, the reason there wasn't an attack was because we were more vigilant?
Well, no, because, you know, they have to, you, I mean, yes, in theory, we could, you could also say that the FBI, you know, unfoiled a plot on the surface of the sun, and I have no way of disproving that. So, yeah, possibly, but there's, again, I'm very specific with what I say, which is that there is no evidence the FBI did that, and again, the FBI typically does a curtain call when they unfoil plots. You know, they oftentimes have press conferences. So it would be quite unusual if they unfoiled the plot and didn't, or rather foiled the plot and didn't take any credit for it.
But didn't we see stories last week and, in fact, over the course of the last month or two or three about the FBI disrupting an ISIS-related terrorism plot here, there, or somewhere else?
Well, so this is where things get a little messy, and this is a large part of what I write about, which is there was a poll done 2 years ago that the average American doesn't read past the headline. I think the number was about 60% of people don't read past the headline. So you have about 60% of the population whose entire worldview is based on headlines. And cable news is effectively headlines being yelled at you. And so when they say ISIS plot unfoiled, or I'm sorry, ISIS plot foiled, people generally assume that there's some sleeper cell with some material connection to ISIS. But that's almost never the case. 99 times out of 100, what it is it's an FBI sting operation. Some in the, you know, constitutional protection world will say that it's actually entrapment. But in every case, there's an FBI informant or an undercover agent involved. So, and they're usually the ones that are planning, plotting, and providing funding for, with different levels of involvement. And so when we see, for instance, an ISIS plot that was thwarted in Brooklyn, what's not mentioned is that several of them were mentally unstable and that they had an informant who was paying people hundreds of thousands of dollars. So in a sense, they're manufacturing these plots that give people the impression, you know, people are busy, they don't have time to look at the affidavits online. It gives people the impression that there's more ISIS terrorists domestically than there really is.
Now, I want to go back to something you just said. Planning, plotting, and providing money for. You're saying that the FBI or other Homeland Security agencies are planning, plotting, and providing money for these so-called plots against America.
Well, because they're not real plots, though. That's an important distinction. They're completely inert. They're not. At no point is anyone ever at risk. There's many cases where they provide bombs that are dummy bombs. Their informants will provide fake missile launchers. So it's not as if the FBI is planning attacks per se. It's that they're planning basically fake attacks. And a lot of what they're also doing is they're buying airplane tickets and having their informants urge people to go fly overseas to Syria. And of course, you know, when you hear the stories about people being arrested at the airport on their way out, almost always that's a case of of an informant kind of prompting them to do so, and that's why the FBI knows where they're going to be.
So those people were duped into pretending that they were going to fly to Syria to join ISIS?
There's various degrees. Some of them are pretty egregious. There's a case specifically, there's the Newberg sting, which was in the Bronx in 2009. There's a documentary you can watch online about it. That's kind of one end of the spectrum where these people were dirt poor. They had just got out of prison. The FBI was going to pay them hundreds of thousands of dollars. Their informant was going to pay them hundreds of thousands of dollars to use a missile to blow up a grounded military plane. And, of course, when they swept in at the 11th hour and arrested them and said, Al-Qaeda sleeper cell plans on blowing up airplanes. So that's one end of the spectrum. And the other end of the spectrum, you have people that are clearly disposed to be radicalized, probably kind of had the intent, and maybe it wasn't so bad the FBI stung them. So there's varying degrees. Some are more egregious than others, but the vast majority of them do involve informants. Yes.
All right. In the context of the ones who the FBI is sort of prodding along, even though the people involved may not have actually been plotting something themselves, but the FBI then gets involved or their informants get involved and they are, again, in your words, planning, plotting, and providing money for whatever is eventually going to happen. The question has to be asked, why would the FBI be doing that? To what end?
Well, it's actually kind of logical. I mean, if you think about it, you know, the FBI, if they're acting in completely, well, there's two reasons. Number one is a cynical reason, which is the FBI has a incentive to hype fear, right, to make it look like these things are more common than they are, because that justifies their budgets and so forth. Then there's the more generous reading of it, and the one I'm kind of maybe more prone to, which is that if the FBI creates an environment where the average, let's say, impressionable Muslim is thinking about terrorism, if they can create the environment where they don't know who's an informant and who isn't, that obviously dissuades people from conspiring to commit terror. Mm-hmm. So even if, and on some meta level, it's an effective way of disrupting communities. It's the same thing they did during COINTELPRO with activists. It is an effective method of sowing distrust, which prevents people from doing things. With whether or not that's ethical or constitutional is a different discussion.
So if the FBI is enlisting people in an effort to fight ISIS who are not actually going to go join ISIS and who are not part of an ISIS plot, it sounds like they're rounding off their own circle.
In a sense, that's true, yes. And you know, a lot of outlets have done good work on this. The Guardian, The Intercept has done work on this. So you can go read other reports from journalists. Glenn Greenwald frequently writes about it. It's a fairly common thing.
Is the real reason behind it, if we can do that, we keep getting funding?
I think that's certainly a motivating factor. I don't like to get too much into psychoanalysis, but you know, there's no downside to doing it if I'm the FBI. And the way the courts have allowed the definition of entrapment to become really, really narrow. Like, as long as the FBI says, in a sense, you don't have to do this, that's pretty much enough to prevent an entrapment defense. And so the pendulum has swung so far the other way that all people want to see is potential terrorists in jail, and the degree to which they were actually potential terrorists is, I think, is somewhat dubious.
But it also feeds right into the American fear syndrome. So much of this country is based on, so much of what we do in this country is based on fear. We're afraid of this, we're afraid of that, we're made to feel afraid of so many things. A lot of people in this country wake up afraid every day that something bad is going to happen. I am not one of them, because I don't fall for a lot of this stuff. But
yeah,
this gets to the other part of what you're discussing in your pieces on the FAIR website, Adam, and that is the involvement by the media in not only taking these FBI terror warnings seriously, but repeating them as if they were bulletins and breaking news.
The thing is that the media has no incentive not to. It's sexy. It's thrilling. And then they make these graphics where they have, you know, the ISIS fighters in Syria with their baklava mask looking really ISIS-y and scary. They superimpose them over fireworks. I mean, again, most people consume TV passively. They see that and they have a very visceral reaction, and they know that. This is why they have those images playing on loop. And it's to give the general impression that you know, again, this is all in our heads in lots of ways. And what I argue is that even if there was some sense that we could be vigilant, I don't quite know what that means.
Yeah,
what
I was going to ask you about that. I don't know how to be more vigilant.
Right. What is the average person supposed to do? And that's that. Like, even if one thinks that the FBI and the Department of Homeland Security operating in completely good faith, and then there are real, you know, real signs that there's this impending attack, no one has yet to explain to me what exactly the average person is supposed to do. Are we supposed to just look for brown people? Are we supposed to, like, I mean, it, again, it's just sowing paranoia without any kind of understanding of what it means.
I'm looking at just two headlines that you have in your piece. One is from MSNBC back in March. National Guard soldier and cousin charged with ISIS plot. Was there an ISIS plot there?
That one's a little bit dicey. There was an informant, but I think there was some material connection to someone in Syria, although it's not clear based on the affidavit.
And the other one is a CNN headline under a graphic that says, "We're definitely on a heightened state of alert." The headline says, "Former CIA official, serious potential for attack."
Yeah, that was Mike Morrell. He's the former, actually interim head of the CIA after Petraeus left, who went on CBS last Monday and said, I mean, in pretty stark terms, even for, you know, these kinds of things, he said, "I wouldn't be surprised if we were sitting here next week talking about a terror attack." And I mean, even I got kind of scared. I mean, it was, I don't think I've seen anything like this since 9/11. It's anyone who lived through that fall, that October, November, when it was just nonstop red alerts.
Yeah.
Even skeptics like me start to get scared.
How much of this becomes the boy who cried wolf?
Well, that's the issue.
And I don't mean Blitzer.
Exactly. If everything is an alert, then nothing's an alert. So I think even people that are concerned with, like, this is an actual method of fighting terrorism, I think they're even kind of, you know, they're the ones that even push back. There's actually originally a really interesting piece in the New York Times in 2002, and also one in Time magazine in 2002, asking how useful these alerts really are. And then when Obama came in 2009, we got rid of that color chart, that really goofy color chart that was kind of a national punchline.
Yep.
And then everyone kind of thought, oh, well, it's over now. But then in a weird way, and I make this argument on Twitter, like, that Bush's color chart was actually more logical in some ways, because at least it tried to provide, to make sense of the senseless. There was a criteria of what you were supposed to do. There was some sense of what it meant. But now they just say heightened alert, and I have no idea what that means. So I'm not really sure getting rid of the color chart was necessarily an improvement. I think the entire enterprise of giving terror alerts is fundamentally stupid. So whether or not it's you know, divided into colors or just words like heightened, I'm not sure if that's really much of an improvement.
Are we getting more of this in the 6 years of Obama than we did in the 8 years of Bush?
Oh, no. No one can ever top Bush, man, especially from 2001 to 2004, especially when they were hyping the election and hyping the war. It was more naked. Tom Ridge in 2009, who was the Secretary of Homeland Security, said that Bush had pressured him in 2004 to raise the alert level before the election. Now, Tom Ridge is a lifetime Republican appointee, had no real incentive to lie. So we have evidence these alerts are politicized. And I think that, you know, the FBI issues these warnings, and most of the hyping is usually done by Peter King, who goes on Fox News and talks about how ISIS hasn't, you know, potentially could have a nuclear weapon. I mean, there's no real check to this. It's just they can kind of say whatever they want.
In the 40 examples over 14 years that you cite in your piece, you say not a single one of them actually predicted or foiled a terror attack. A follow-up question to that would be, of the various things that we have had happen in America, how many of them were predicted by the FBI?
Right. None. I mean, that's what I also point out. The Boston bombing, underwear bombing, the Garland attack, none of them were preceded by any kind of warning, vague or otherwise. So that's also something that should be registered.
So, Adam, have you talked to people in the media about this at CNN or MSNBC or Fox or anywhere else? And I mentioned the cable networks because they are the ones who have all day long to put out graphics and music and headlines and scare the bejesus out of us more than anything else.
I briefly talked to Jake Taper on CNN, who actually kind of vaguely brought up one of my objections to Michael Chertoff, who was the former head Department of Homeland Security. And I think that there's a sense that, and one of the journalists from CNN said to me, would you prefer we not issue these warnings? Would you prefer we not issue them at all? And I said, yes. Like, I don't know what law of nature says that the media is obligated to go regurgitate FBI press releases, and to do so entirely without criticism. So I think there's a sense that the government hands you something and you're a major news network that you somehow have this obligation to disseminate it. And I think that, you know, even if I accept that that's true, do you need to disseminate it nonstop for a week? Do you need to have your sexed up sort of ISIS porn graphics that visceral, that, you know, or like you got children hiding? I mean, I went on Twitter and I looked up people who were canceling 4th of July plans, and there's a lot of them. And a lot of them are, you know, teenagers and stuff who didn't live through 9/11 who genuinely think the world's about to, you know, we're all about to be blown up. And it's,
really?
Yeah, I can show. I was going to make a listicle of them. Yeah. And I don't want to, you know, you don't want to, like, mock people, right? These are somewhat obscure people. But it's a very common thing, people that either were genuinely scared or canceled plans. And, you know, being better safe than sorry does have a downside to it.
What does canceling your 4th of July plan do to help any effort against what might potentially happen if there were an attack?
They would say better safe than sorry. Whatever, and again, this is this thought-terminating cliche. We all say better safe than sorry. If you see something, say something. We repeat these mantras that don't actually mean anything.
Wow. I'm stunned that there are actually people who are canceling their plans based on these reports, because I've lived through these 14 years and heard all these reports and heard them all usually based around something big. And by the way, Adam, there's also a suggestion here that the people who would actually pull something off on a grand scale would be stupid enough to do it at a time when they know we're already at that heightened level. For instance, the Super Bowl, the Oscars, New Year's Eve in New York City.
Yeah, and, you know, then the FBI would say maybe that's one of the reasons they do it. But then again, we get into this circular logic of what I argue is that you have to take into account the negative effects of fear. And would people just say it's better safe than sorry? Well, yes, but there's a downside to that, that fear has consequences. Just today, there was another false alarm in Walter Reed Hospital in Washington, D.C. Now, Walter Reed canceled all their patient visits that day, you know, potentially put lives at risk. There's a consequence for being paranoid.
Yes. There absolutely is a consequence for being paranoid. That's the best way you can put it. I'm going to put a link to your piece on my website, harrisonline.com, and let people read about this and think about it as well, and decide whether they want to continue to live in fear. And, you know, of course, you know the real reason that the media does it is because once they get handed that report by the FBI, they don't want to be the media outlet that forgot to warn us if something actually did happen.
Well, it's also a really cheap way of doing journalism, because there's not any actual journalism involved. You're just reading a press release, so it's kind of really easy to.
Yeah. Of course, even if they have warned us, I'm still not sure exactly what it is I'm supposed to do. I'm not going to.
That is yet to be made clear to me as well.
Yeah. Adam Johnson. The piece is on fair.org. That's Fairness and Accuracy in Reporting. Thanks so much for joining me here today.
Thank you, sir.
I'm Paul Harris. This is the Big 550 KTRS.